We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Don't stress. Listen to the podcast at WTIC.com or on the free Odyssey app.
Good afternoon to you, WTIC. We're halfway through the week, can that be? No, a little beyond halfway through the week. It's hump day, though. Wednesday, Todd with you till 6 o'clock, 860-522-9842. There's been a lot in the news about about social media, and now they're looking to ban TikTok, the most popular social media. They're not actually looking to ban it. They just like being able to talk about pretending to do regulation, because we're dumb enough in general to think it's a good thing if the government steps in between us and private enterprise, which usually works out to be a disaster for us. But nobody reports on that. Anyway, to talk about it, we've got a guy here from an organization called EdChoice, which is a place where they do research on these kinds of issues. So Colin Ritter joins us now on WTIC. Colin, thanks for being here.
Yeah, of course, Todd. Thank you for having me.
Tell us what your take on this is, and what needs to change in the world based on the research you've done. Where are our vulnerabilities, and what does this legislation do? Is it a hit in terms of banging the bat right on the center of the ball of what's wrong, or is it way off base, or what?
So we don't specifically deal with social media related legislation like the TikTok ban. And again, it is pretty hot topic. Like you said, it's happening today. Our organization our mission is to advance educational freedom and choice for all as a pathway to successful lives and a stronger society. And we feel the way to do that is through school choice. And one of the areas of research we do is polling. And twice a year, we actually poll teenagers to kind of get their take on things mostly related to education, but there are also more broad questions about, cell phone use, access of social media, things like that. To answer your question specifically about social media use among teenagers, there's really no way to spin it other than the fact that they self-report being on social media very often. I know that's not crazy.
That's not a surprise.
It's not a surprise. It's not breaking news by any means. But, I mean, the data is pretty staggering once you look at it. 74% of teens say that they're on social media at least very often. Mm-hmm. That's even more among 9th and 10th graders.
That surprised me about your research. It seemed like middle school is more the issue than high school.
Yeah, so middle school is actually, we can go a number of different ways on this report. It was overflowing with really interesting headlines. Middle school is a little bit tougher in terms of classroom disruptions. Middle school, 65% of middle schoolers said that students are causing disruptions at least very often, and that was at least 20 points higher than teens generally, especially in high school. It actually goes down in high school. And again, we don't know if that's, just your classic classroom disruptions. We don't know if that's cell phone related, but it is happening in middle school more often. So it's worth wondering about, especially when it comes to cell phone use and social
media. Well, that's the important thing, I think, is if kids are self-reporting disruption, it doesn't really matter what the nature of it is. Because the big challenge is for a teacher is how much time do you spend trying to get everybody organized and paying attention versus learning something? And the cell phones have always struck me as they should never have been allowed into the classroom. And here we are, however many years, 15 years down the road.
Yeah, Todd, I think you're totally right. I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with learning loss. That became a really key term post-COVID with school closures. But, I mean, another form of learning loss can be just minutes in the classroom, like you're saying. If students are misbehaving or if teachers are having trouble getting a hold of the classroom, there are students in there who are eager to learn and trying to learn who aren't getting that valuable time spent with the teacher and the learning. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're totally right. It's not really worth figuring out why the classroom or what exactly is causing the disruptions, but they are happening, and it's worth trying to figure out
what
exactly
else,
kind of how to go through with this.
I mean, what's the big theme, since you're culling through all this data and trying to figure out what's going on? What's the thing that people don't know that we should know?
I mean, the biggest theme for me is that teens are not enjoying their time in school. You know, that's not to say they think it's a waste of time. There's actually we asked that question, only 30% of teens say it's a waste of time, but they don't feel particularly safe. They think their schools are doing a poor job handling issues like guns, bullying, violent behavior.
They're bored.
They're bored. They're absolutely bored. 64% of teens said that they were bored. So there's boredom. There's a lack of safety. They don't feel very supported in school. But again, they don't say it's a waste of time. So to me, that signals that they do feel the value in it. They just don't think the execution or the implementation where they go to school is up to their standard. And that's one thing I appreciate about this generation of teenagers is that they're absolutely willing to speak out and they will say it very directly. And I think what they're saying is that they want more from their school post-COVID.
So this, your organization, you said at the beginning that you guys are for school choice. And
yes,
define that for us. I'm assuming that means for funding to flow freely to any school. Is that what you're looking for?
Well, what we really want is the funding to follow the student. So, you know, if a student isn't getting the quality education that they deserve in their school that they are residentially assigned to, then we believe that they have the right to look elsewhere for their schooling options. And, you know, that could be another public school. One of the big myths of school choice and those who support it, like myself, are that we are anti-public school. We want to see education, you know, to turn it on its head for public schools to shut down. That couldn't be further from the case. You know, when we say school choice, we just want the families to have options. That can be another public school right down the road, you know, 20 minutes away, however far away. It can be a homeschool, a charter school, micro school.
Why do you feel the need to make that qualification, though? I mean, do people push back automatically and think it's a horrible thing to?
Well, lately, especially with the discourse of school, and I agree, it's not the perfect way to say it, but when we think school choice, and I deal with people and we talk and we have these debates all the time, and when you hear school choice, they think vouchers, they think you want to take money out of the public school system, but that is not the case at all. We actually have data that shows families are very happy with their public school and would still choose a public school if given all the options. And again, that's just worth stating that school choice is not saying that we think you should take your child to one type of school. It's just opening the options for your family, because the reality is, like we've talked about with teenagers, is that these students aren't getting the quality education they deserve, and it's a tough job, and you know, they deserve to look elsewhere.
Colin Ritter is our guest. He's from EdChoice. You know, the reason I'm sensitive to that is because I think we have to, and I understand what you're trying to do, because you want to get people thinking about the idea that they could send their kid to a school that's actually targeted towards the interests or needs of their kid, rather than restricting them to one type of school in one type of system. But to me, it's so ludicrous. We would not consider in any other realm of our lives to have to not be allowed to have a market where we got to choose the best thing to put our kids into, and to have a reserve for wealthy people, excellent schools, and have ordinariness and mundaneness for all the other kids. And I think what your research indicates, how many kids did you say were bored? 60%?
64%, and those are the nationally represented.
So that's two-thirds of the kids sitting in school are bored. That's a failed school system. Why is nobody running around proposing to fix the failed school system?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, like I said, it's a lot of undoing what has already been done, and the infrastructure is there, and it's been the way of life. But the reality
that last thing, though, it's been the way of life, and we have such status quo bias that we can't figure out that we wouldn't go to a grocery store that was the required government grocery store. We wouldn't go to a restaurant and eat the food that the kids have to eat in school. But we take the most important thing we do and don't allow it to be in a competitive environment where we know excellence would have a chance to rise to the top.
Yeah, I mean, you're nailing it. You're nailing the argument right on the head, Todd. And the thing is, what people don't realize is, with all the downsides of COVID, it feels weird to call it a silver lining, but parents were able to get a firsthand look at what was happening within schools. And I'm not trying to say that educating during a pandemic is any easy job by any means. It's incredibly difficult to educate, not even within, outside of the COVID realm. But with COVID, parents got the idea of what's happening with their child's education. And since then, you've seen in the last couple of years, states all over the country,
including changes,
enacting legislation, school choice bills around the country, giving universal school choice to every family in their state.
Can you hang on 1 second? I want to find out details on that, how much of this is going on, because it's really important. Like, I think this is the most serious problem America has is union-run public schools, one size fits all. And I want to find out how big the movement is to change that. We're talking to Colin Ritter from Ed Choice. More coming up on WTIC.
Never miss a moment. Go listen to the Todd Feinberg podcast on the Odyssey app.
Thanks for being here, WTIC. We're talking with Colin Ritter, edchoice.org. We're talking about the need for school choice, because kids should get to go to great schools, not mundane, tedious ones that pursue the ordinary, which is what we have when we have a government-run system. Government can't run anything. It certainly can't run education. It's not even trying. It sold out education control to unions a long time ago, and unions make the decision. For example, shutting down schools during COVID, that was a union force thing. So, Colin, I wanted to find out what's going on in terms of school choice, because you mentioned there's a trend going on in the country. I assume you mean there's a positive trend. That is, there are new states and new municipalities that are passing laws that open the door a bit to competition between schools. So fill us in.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, post-COVID, things kind of changed for parents and also for legislators. In the last couple of years, you've seen a handful of states go from, limited amount of school choice, sometimes even very little school choice, to 100% universal. Every family in their state will have options in their child's education. So, I mean, the last time I looked at the numbers, I think we're over 20 million students are now eligible across the country for a school choice program.
And how many students are there across the country? 100 million?
Yeah, it's around that number. We're looking at around a fifth of students.
But is there a good story in there you can tell? Where a state maybe that's doing a grand experiment?
I mean, Arizona was kind of the one to go head on into universal school choice with their ESA program. And you'll notice if you dig deep enough, there's plenty of data looking at learning loss over the past couple of years where states like Arizona are doing less bad in tests like the NAEP, the National Advancement Educational Progress, standardized tests, where Arizona is doing, in states like Florida, Arizona with robust school choice, are doing better than states like Texas with no school choice. So there's that aspect of it, but also the fact that it's just a winning issue. Family, there's serious public support, not only from the parents and people with a stake in the game, but also from people without children and non-parents who also support school choice. You're looking at like 70-80% support for education savings accounts, two-thirds support for vouchers. No matter how much misinformation is out there, there's logs and logs of data looking at public support for school choice. And
so what happened to the thing of that strong feeling of bond between parents and their public school teachers and their knee-jerk defense of the status quo? Is that just a fable, or have we seen a shift in those numbers in recent years?
No, I mean, again, parents do like public school. We have a question where we ask, what would you pick? No matter, take away any of the red tape, you can go anywhere you want. I think it's around 40, sometimes 50% of parents would still pick a public school, and they still do like the community aspect of it. Again, I think it was just COVID opened their eyes, and there have been too many instances where the public school system is failing many families, especially families with special needs students, and they're just not getting the support and the services they need, and so they've been forced to look elsewhere. And previously, that's only been available to families with the financial means to do so. And now we're trying to make that a reality for everyone, regardless of your financial means.
Well, that's pretty remarkable that with most kids in the country forced to go to public school, and only half of the captive audience really is saying that they like public schools first. That's a low number to me. That's a sign of failure on the part of the public schools.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just the fact that education is super personal to the student, and families want different things from education. Like you said,
they want options.
Yeah, I mean, that's the bare minimum, at least. But then when you look into it and you see what parents want, they may prioritize safety. They may prioritize socialization. You never know. But you do know the choices are diverse and the preferences are diverse. So to restrict them to only where they live, you know, one school in the neighborhood, it makes no sense. When I first got into it, that was kind of my thinking. I was like, of course, school choice is the right thing to do. Why would we force the student to stick in their school based on where they live? But then looking into it, the research, the public support, it's really a no-brainer to me. And the fact that states and lawmakers have seen this in the last several years is kind of proof of that. And it's an exciting time, honestly. There's a lot of work to be done, but we're making the right strides. States around the country are making the right strides. And one more thing is the awareness of school choice is a totally separate issue. We're now no longer hoping states take the leap and, enact school choice and listen to their constituents. Now we're trying to get families to know that they have options, and that's a whole nother animal. It's a really interesting problem. And we're really looking forward to solving it, and the implementation of these programs is paramount. And we have to look at states like Florida, Arizona, Ohio, who have had choice for a long time, who are doing it well, and families are supportive. And like I said, there's data to show that these students are suffering from learning loss and things like that at a lesser rate than states without choice. So there's really no other way to go in terms of if you're a state lawmaker and you're trying to think, how can we stop the drag that is, you know, K-12 education currently as it is. I mean, you look at families and what teachers say about the state of education. It's grim, and there's a lot of work to be done.
A lot of change is needed. All right, Colin Ritter, appreciate your time. EdChoice.org. Visit EdChoice.org. Appreciate it, Colin. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Todd.
And we're going to break for news after. Oh, there's a ton of good stuff to talk about. The universities, yes. Ukraine funding, yes. Ned knocking down trees without getting a permit, yep. And then just slinging the normal bull dung afterwards. We're going to break for news and then talk about it coming up on W.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
UTIC.
Why wait? Come on. Oh, come on. Why wait? You can rant right now at 860-751-4698 on the Todd Feinberg Show.
WTIC. I just want to start this half hour off just bring you up to speed a little bit on Ned the poacher, the tree poacher. He is a it's clear that Ned Lamont cares little about the best interests of the state, cares little about following the law, doesn't have any interest in the job he does. He just likes having the job, being the governor, being called the governor, and the inherent sort of respect and import that comes with, you know, that people bring to the idea that they're meeting the governor or talking to the governor or serving the governor. They think that's an important person. Until, of course, they meet Ned Lamont or they read about him. For example, this story in the Hearst papers, Governor Ned Lamont cited for illegally cutting down 180 trees behind his home. Yowza, Greenwich, more than 180 trees, thousands of bushes and other plant life were illegally cut down on the shared land behind Governor Ned Lamont's Greenwich home, according to town records and officials. The culling, which spanned some 1,200 feet across several acres, happened without permits in a protected wetland, according to the Greenwich Inland Wetlands and Watercourse Agency. And it had the effect of opening up a scenic view from Ned's house and his neighbors, the Vicks, down the hillside to Indian Spring Pond below. Okay, so this was clearly a scheme being run by these wealthy families, led by Governor Ned Lamont, to ignore the law, because this is what rich people do. I had a rich uncle who did this once on Cape Cod. He had like 6 acres on the water, and he wanted a dock that wouldn't be approved. So he had them build the dock in the middle of the night. Get started on it. It was done in a couple days before the town could properly respond. And then they spent a couple of years fighting about it, and they made a compromise, and he got to keep his dock. If you're rich, that's how you view local ordinances and controlling laws. And that's what Ned did here. Town documents do not explicitly say who ordered the trees to come down 5 months ago, but Lamont, his neighbors, the Vicks, and the Ashton Drive Association, which owns nearby vacant land, have all been cited for wetlands violations in Greenwich. And what does Ned say about it? Oh, you wait till you hear that. The Lamonts appear to be the ones that hired the contractor, says Beth Evans, town's director of environmental affairs and an advisor to that board with the incomprehensible name that monitors this thing. When asked about the situation, Ned described it. Listen to the con man kicks in instantly. Ned described it as a dispute between the association, that is this controlling board that supervises to make sure you're not scamming the law the way Ned is. He said it's a dispute between the association and one of the neighbors. Which one of the neighbors? You are one of the neighbors, Ned. And there's three neighbors, and all had their land impacted by this cutting down of trees without a permit on wetlands. Then he says the association and the neighbors are working it out. Well, now he's making the neighbors into plural. First, he says it's one of the neighbors that's involved in the dispute. And then he says the association and the neighbors, plural, are working it out. He's always providing spin that is questionable. So that's what Ned is involved with. Cutting down trees without a permit. Okay, listen to this. Originally, the stretch of land was thick with American beech trees, pignut hickory, and dozens of sugar maples. Dozens. According to documents and testimony submitted to the controlling authority from an environmental consultant who worked on the land. These trees, some of which stood 40 feet tall, lined a small river that runs behind the Lamonts and the Vix's houses to the pond below. This action went far beyond the destruction to the wetlands vegetation, according to the guy involved. It was a coordinated destruction of the entire ecosystem in that area, and the perpetrators should restore the entire area as closely as possible to the way it was. So here's what an activist in the area, a professional in the area, says needs to happen. He says they need to put back in the trees and the vegetation that was cut down. How about that? Imagine trying to put back American beech trees, pignut hickory, dozens of sugar maples. Imagine trying to get thousands of shrubs. The stretch of land was thick with trees, and they knocked them all down. It was a coordinated destruction of the entire ecosystem in that area. How many millions of dollars is it going to cost to rebuild this? Yeah, Ned doesn't care about millions of dollars, but when he wants a better view, he ignores the law. 860-522-9842. I just wanted you to know about that, because I've been telling you for years now what a slime ball this guy is and how he's not interested in things that matter to the people of the state or the best interests of the people of the state. And there's some new proof for you. Juan East Hartford. Hi, Juan.
What a piece of, you know what?
Can you believe him?
Hypocritical at his best. Now, this is the guy who's enforcing us to drive electric vehicles because the environment is so important. And then he cuts down not only incredibly huge trees that purify the air of our neighbor New York City, but for the residents of Greenwich.
Isn't that amazing?
All out for his personal gain.
Isn't that amazing?
It's just to kind of brush it off as a neighbor dispute. Yeah, he had a neighbor who dropped a dime on him. And now that neighbor is making sure that the governor, I hope that neighbor just follows through with this until that governor has to pay and plant every single tree back on that property. Because the last time that I had an easement violation on a piece of property that I own, the town, it was just incredible what they wanted to do. I did it. I took care of it. But it was just, it was very, very, very thorough. And I hope that the environmental department down in Greenwich that oversees the easements and the wetlands enforce the law.
They seem not to be pulling punches here. Listen to this. 5 months ago, Fred Jacobson was at work when he heard chainsaws buzzing in the distance. Jacobson, a property manager for privately owned forest lands in Greenwich's mid-country below the Merritt Parkway, followed the sound until he found a freshly cleared stretch of land recently stripped of hundreds of trees, bushes, and plants. Jacobson said he saw a massive cutting effort on that November 9th day that appeared to have been underway for several days. Originally, the stretch of land was thick with, I read that apart about all the trees. But you can see that this was not something that was a little soft sound in the distance. This is a guy who's way off, and he hears the din very softly, and he has to drive and find where it's going on. It's remarkable that these guys are so arrogant.
It is totally disgusting. Just as arrogant as his position with COVID, just as his arrogant as his position with Annie's businesses, this guy is just a crook.
Well, I think he's even worse than a crook, because a crook needs money, presumably. Ned doesn't need any. He just... finds it somehow stature enhancing to scam the people. And I think it's because he knows he can get away with it. Thank you, Juan, for the call. We're going to take a quick break and then talk to Everett and others coming up on WTIC.
Never miss a moment. Go listen to the Todd Feinberg podcast on the Odyssey app.
All right, it's WTIC. Talking about Ned Lamont, the scammer, the tree killer, the wildlife enemy, the climate change terrorist, I guess we'd call him. Everett in East Hartford. Hi, Everett.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, Naughty Ned.
Naughty Ned.
Yes, he's a bully. He's a spoiled brat that's always gotten his way. And it's do as I say, not as I do. These are also the same people that want to change some of the environmental laws so that if you have a puddle that's bigger than 1 foot by 1 foot and it's more than 2 days in your backyard, it's considered wetlands, and then the state wants to take control of your property and tell you what you can and cannot put in your own property. And if I'm not mistaken, the way you described the story, it sounds like that wasn't even his property.
No, no. Part of it was his. So there was him and a neighbor right next door to each other.
Oh, okay.
And they get a better view out of this. So the people, the town officials are pretty upfront about that. There's a clear benefit that what they did resembles what people do when they want to improve their views. And she's referring to people who do it legally. And they did the same kind of culling of trees that give them a much better view. And you can now see their houses from the water, from the pond, that you used to not be able to see. So there's a clear change in the environment that you probably wouldn't have been able to get approved. And then there's another, a third association that bought a ton of land that used to belong to the Rockefellers, called INCT LLC. And they're the third party to this. And these three were working together, apparently.
Well, I see the poor contractor getting the short end of the stick, because he's probably the one with the least amount of money and the easiest one to go after. So they will probably pawn it all off on him, and they'll play dumb, saying, well, gee, I paid this guy and he's supposed to be a professional. How did I know he didn't pull the permits?
Well, that's
not my fault.
That's interesting that you say that, because I'm looking for the name and I don't see it. But there is a vendor in Your Gardening Angels, a Stamford company, was doing the work, and
they're going to get stiffed hard because Ned's going to make them put it all back.
I love this insight. One of the companies, I don't know if it's them, but one of the companies is quoted in the story. Oh, S.E. Minor, a land surveying and engineering services firm, was hired by the Lamonts, the Vicks, and the Ashton Drive Association after the incident to help them rehabilitate the hillside. So these guys are already getting to work on what has to be $1 million plus to put all thousands of shrubs back in and 40-foot trees.
Congratulations to them.
Yeah, I hope they get paid well for it, Everett. I hope they're not getting stiffed the way you think. But I like your insight. Thank you for sharing that. Anything else you want us to know?
Have a great day.
You too, Everett. Good to hear from you. Dave in Northfield. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm loving this story. How about you?
Well, I just got to say, you should check or do some inquiries into any of the local sawmills, because all that stuff you were talking about is money wood.
It is. Why? Yeah, what do they do with it? You mean it's good to build things with?
It's old growth. It can be used for furniture.
Wow.
And all that wood was typically used for furniture in the old days, like chestnut, hickory, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
That's money wood.
Okay, I'm gonna send a the writer for the Hearst newspapers, Andy Bly. I'm gonna send him a note saying he should check with the sawmills. Yeah. Where would there be a sawmill, though? There can't be one near Greenwich, can there?
Well, I don't know. They got one up here in Norfolk. I mean, so I gotta imagine there's something else around.
Interesting. All right, I will make that recommendation. Anything else you want to tell us?
No, that's it. I'm just tired of them giving away all my money to people that aren't paying back their loans, and the illegals, they got to cover the health care of the whole rest of the world now. I mean,
it doesn't matter. They would just use it to run the wood stove if they had to. You know, they'll burn your money one way or the other.
Yeah, well, actually, it's kind of ironic. I was just looking at a thing today about old Germany where they were lighting a wood stove with the Deutschmarks because they, in 1923 or something, they weren't worth damn.
See that? That's where we're headed. Thank you, Dave. Good to hear from you. Mike in Canton. Hi, Mike.
Hey, I was thinking, so this ought to trigger an automatic focused reval on him, and I would think that it'd be appropriate that the town should levy an adjusted assessment because now he has a view tax issue. So there's more than one way to skin this cat. So you want to live by the sword, you die by the sword, Ned, Mr. Everyday Man.
Wait, so does the value of his property go up because of the new view? Is that what you're saying?
100%. There's not a municipality near water in the world that doesn't whack you a view tax. And if you're near the water, it goes up exponentially. So he might have just axed himself right in the foot.
Well, let's hope so.
If the town is smart, they'd unleash the assessor's office on him. Of course, he's probably all got him in his hip pocket, but they should initiate a focused reval on his property, and his assessment should be adjusted accordingly because everybody else in Greenwich is paying a view tax. So if he just created a view, good for him.
Mike, that's awesome. Thank you so much. Great to hear from you. I'm going to put that in my note to Andy Bly at GreenwichTime.com. Okay, how is the ride going? Let's go to the BPS Lawyers Traffic Center for the latest from Ian.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.